Scott Speaks again here on the Brofly Network, because Todd's too fucking lazy to show up and do the show. Kidding, not kidding. Cinco Cuatro, day before Cinco de Mayo, Saturday evening. And yeah, little Scott Speaks. Let's hang out, chat, get personal. All right, maybe not. We'll have to wait and see. But yeah, just want to come on and give you guys an update. I know that this week was supposed to be the 250th, the quincentennial, whatever, semi-quincentennial episode, but it didn't happen. We're going to do it next week. A couple different factors as to why. It doesn't matter. And then, as we mentioned on the show before that, last week's show, likely going to have a special guest here in the next couple of weeks. Not exactly sure. We have to schedule it. But we will have a special guest who's going to come on, and it's going to be a lot of basketball talk. A lot of NBA talk. Playoffs are going on, as most of you know, if you don't live in a cave. And so it's time to pull out a guest who can speak intelligently on that topic, amongst other things, but specifically that topic. So I'll keep it under wraps for now in case it doesn't happen, but like 95% chance it's going to happen, because this person and I have been talking about the NBA as of late, as recently as a couple hours ago. So clearly he is staying in the know. And it will be a lot more than just the current playoffs, current players, current teams. We'll go deep into the archives of the history of the NBA, talk about some Mount Rushmores, all-time great lists, things of that sort. And yeah, it'll be a friendly, hopefully, debate with certainly some back and forth on who we think go into those lists. But honestly, I'm still kind of creating the outline for that show. You know, going to want to talk about, you know, again, Mount Rushmores or top five lists or top 10 lists, even for greatest players of all time, greatest shooters. If you could create, you know, the perfect team at all five positions, what would it look like? Those sorts of things. And I just kind of need to map that out, get it over to this guest so he can think about it, get it over to Todd so he can ignore it until 10 minutes for the show, and then he can give it 10 minutes of thought. And we'll kind of run through that. But very excited to see where that can take us and see where that will land. So that's coming up in the near future. Probably maybe the week that the NBA Finals start. That makes sense. It will not be next week at the very earliest. It will be 2 weeks from now. But definitely excited about that. And that's something that Todd and I have, not with this guest specifically, but just having guests in general is something Todd and I have talked about for a long time, but never really done. Occasionally we'll have people on the show, or we were on other podcasts as well that I uploaded as the show for the week. Shout out to Rhino. So yeah, anyway, so that's coming up in the not too distant future. So stay tuned for that. And again, next week will be the 250th. You know, unlike the sesquicentennial show or the 100th show or even the 200th show, the sesquicentennial was insane. 150th show, it was like a four-parter that there was a lot. There was a lot going on during that show. I don't suspect the 250th will be like that. You know, maybe it should have more than the sesquicentennial, but for those of you that grew up in Columbia that know, sesquicentennial is the main park in the Columbia area, and so it made sense to make that one more of a big deal than perhaps the 100th, 200th, or even the 250th show. But anyway, so it'll be something, but it's not going to be like this extravaganza as some of our other, you know, seasonal shows, whether it's Halloween or Christmas or the 150th, as I mentioned, have been. But anyway, so that's what's coming up. But again, I want to hop on tonight and just get some thoughts out there. Just finished watching a documentary called Strange Negotiations. It's available for a small price on Amazon Prime if you're interested in watching it. I'm sure if you wait 6 months, it'll be on Fubo or Pluto or something. But I didn't want to wait 6 months. Even though it's a movie that's, I think, 4 years old at this point, maybe five. But it's a documentary about David Bazan, who is the frontman and creator of the band Pedro the Lion. He's also put out a bunch of stuff with other bands. He's also put out a bunch of solo stuff as well. And it just kind of followed his journey. I think it mainly took place in like 2015, 2016 was the majority of the film. As a, admittedly, a tortured touring artist. It also, for a bit, kind of documented his struggle, because early on in his career, he put out more kind of Christian music on Christian labels, that sort of thing. And he'd grown up in the church. And at a certain point in his late teens, early 20s, he kind of had a coming to Jesus, for lack of a better term. But no, he had kind of a realization that maybe that wasn't the direction he wanted to go. And so it talked a lot about that and his journey and his struggles with that. But again, it mainly highlighted a tour that he did, the Living Room Tour, which he's done multiple times, where he literally drives across the country and plays house shows in people's living rooms. And it's more than just him playing the music. He will actually, as part of the show, and certainly afterwards, he'll do like a Q&A with the people that show up and answer, pretty personal questions, like what it's like to be someone who used to represent that scene and now he doesn't anymore, that sort of thing. But it was definitely interesting. I've been a Pedro the Lion fan for a couple decades. First heard them when I was a DJ at WSBF back in the late 90s, early 2000s. And it's interesting music, I'll say. It's certainly not the typical music that I listen to, which I listen to a lot of stuff, but if people know me and they're like, oh, this is what Scott listens to, this is not what you would classify as that. It is like singer-songwriter. It is, very, for the most part, very personal music. It's kind of like lo-fi, slo-fi even. Some of it is literally just acoustic guitar and vocals. So again, checking all the boxes for things I listen to. Just kidding. It's not at all. But it's very, for me, it's very interesting lyrically and even musically. And as I was telling Jamie earlier, it's something that I found out early on. Todd introduced me to it, to Pedro the Lion. I think I'll give him credit for that. There was a CD at WSBF, but he kind of talked them up, I guess. But also, interrupting myself again, David Bazan looks a lot like Todd. Look it up on the internet, you'll see. But anyway, it's something that I found out pretty early on that he, David Bazan, played all of the parts for a lot of the Pedro the Lion music, because in his early time in bands, he was a drummer. Obviously, he plays guitar. If you play guitar, you automatically play bass. He's a singer. He's a songwriter. And for many of those Pedro the Lion albums, the music that you hear was just kind of a touring band, if you will. They didn't necessarily write a lot of it. He wrote much of it. And that's just so incredibly rare. First of all, it's incredibly rare to have the ability to play multiple instruments. Not a lot of people can do that. I think arguably most famously, at least recently, Dave Grohl would do a lot of the, like, write all the Foo Fighters stuff, which is fine. I think more now he allows Pat Smear and the other musicians to actually contribute and write the songs. But for a long time, he wrote everything. And there was a rumor, and it may be true, that he played everything on some of the early Foo Fighters records in the studio. And then they go live, go out live. And of course, it was the full band. But in any event, when you have a talent like that, it's that much more intriguing to me, because I can't do that. I can sing. I have sung on recorded material. I can play drums, and that's about it. I can play one song on bass, Nirvana's Come As You Are. because it's pretty straightforward, and I can't play anything on guitar. I have a guitar, I have an amp, but I don't play it. I should, but I don't. And so when you come across people that have that musical ability where they can do that, again, it's all the more intriguing to me. So it was interesting, and I remember when he did that first round, at least, of those living room, going back to David Bazan, the first round of that living room tour thing. You know, I read an article or I saw something about it, and it was just fascinating to me that you would, like, no one did that, and still really no one does that. I mean, you have to kind of be an individual. You can't do it as a band. It doesn't make sense logistically, I don't think. But to be a singer-songwriter and just reach out to a fan base and say, hey, you know, presumably he probably started it on Twitter. Hey, guys, I'm thinking of doing this. Let me know if you'd be interested. You get enough people that are interested, you figure out all the logistics, which cannot be easy, doing it all on your own. By the way, I'm not just talking about the logistics of setting up the tour. That's hard enough. You know, saying, hey, I'd like to kind of drive in one direction and then turn and go up the East Coast and then turn around and come back, you know, whatever. That's hard enough. But also the logistics of, you know, just touring. What's it going to take to travel for gas? Like, where, how can I fit all this stuff in my car, in my van? He sells merch at every show. Can I, you know, should I bring this certain amount of merch and then at a certain point have another, you know, refresh of that same merch ship somewhere? Because, and they made it look like it from this documentary that we watched, he sold merch pretty well at each stop, as I might imagine. If you're willing to go to a stranger's house, again, these are living room shows. They're in just someone's house for the most part. If you're willing to go to a person's house and see a singer-songwriter perform, you're probably going to drop $20 on a t-shirt or a record or stickers or whatever. So I assume he did pretty well on that. And obviously that helped supplement the financial need on the tour. But anyway, so it was just really interesting. It talked more about his personal life and the struggles that you would certainly have if you were not around. I mean, apparently he's recently divorced, but he was married, two kids during the course of this documentary. And he's trying to stay in touch with what his kids are doing over the phone, watching videos, texting, talking to his wife, talking to his kids. But you're not there. And he made that very clear. You know, he's very honest about that. Like, I'm not here. At one point, his son had finally ridden his bike without training wheels. And he was like, I didn't see it. I wasn't there. I heard about it. I talked to him about it. I congratulated him on it, but I wasn't literally there. And look, that happens a lot. You know, things happen. These milestones happen. Kids' first words, first steps. It's hard to, for anyone really, to be there, you know, unless you're the parent that's with the child. But it's hard for both parents to see all of those things. So I certainly get it and sympathize and empathize, but it was just really interesting. And you know, he had he's an extremely introspective guy to begin with. It comes out and is reflected in his music. If you've ever heard Pedro the Lion or any of the David Bazan solo stuff, like, he goes deep, right? And he gets very personal in his music and talks about very personal things. So, you know, all that stuff has come out in the past, if you will. But it was, you know, one of the biggest takeaways for me in watching the film was, and I think a question a lot of people would ask is, well, why keep doing this? Why are you constantly out on the road? Find something else to do. He must have another marketable skill. He must, you know, have the ability to get some other job. I think it's twofold. First of all, he may not. He's been playing music and recording music for 30 years at this point, 30 years plus. He's nearly 50 in real time. And again, this movie was about 8 years old or so. So he was coming up on 40 when they were making it. But you know, find something else to do. But the reality, I think, for him is he doesn't want to do anything else. As much as it bothers him and hurts him and hurts his relationship with his family and his wife and kids, this is what he knows. This is what he's really good at. And this is what he wants to do. That's my takeaway anyway. And my, you know, I'm not making excuses for him, but it might feel like that. But so I get it. You know, I get that that's how he has chosen. I don't want to say once. That's how he has chosen to live his life, is out there just kind of doing his own thing. And it's an interesting, I guess, personification of both chasing your dreams, which is a very cliche thing to say that I hate, but also like having desire and drive to do something, right? Even though it's at the peril for him during the course of this documentary, at the peril of his relationship with his kids and his wife, maybe at the peril financially, because towards the end, he kind of reformed the band because he's like, look, I can make the same amount of money, maybe even make more money and be home more if I'm back with Pedro the Lion. So he did in 2017, reform Pedro the Lion. And they're still together today, releasing an album and going on tour actually next month. But in any event, so shout out to them. Check it out. But, you know, but before that had happened, when it was just still him solo, he's like, I have to do this. He even said one of the lines in the movie was, he said, or something along the lines of, if there's an image of me, you know, if you were to search image of David Mazan, it should be him in a car on I-95, just traveling to the next show. Because that's just what he does. That's what he, I don't want to say that's what he is, but that's what his life had become. And was at that point in time and had been for many years. So, but again, I respect the desire and drive to stay with that and to stay consistent and to keep plugging away, and doing what not only you know best, because certainly at this point in his life, that's what he knows best, but also what you are happiest doing. And I say that with a grain of salt, because again, if you watch the movie and or if you know anything about him or his personal life, which I don't claim to know anything about his personal life other than what I saw in the film, but he doesn't seem that happy. In fact, they talked about a period of his life when he was, you know, basically an alcoholic, and he was certainly depressed. Whether it was diagnosed or not is not relevant, but he was clearly depressed. He was struggling with his faith. He was struggling with the potential for his career, struggling with his family life. I think he was married at that point or close to it when the point in his life when he was going through the heavy drinking. And it can't help if you're a solo artist going out on the road and just being by yourself for, you know, days, weeks, months on end with nothing but free time, you know. I mean, so to speak, you're playing a show, you finish a show, you go to a hotel, you wake up, maybe you have a 4-hour drive to the next show, but you wake up in a hotel by yourself, you get back in the car by yourself, you're driving by yourself, you know. And it's not that, and I've experienced this, certainly not to the degree that he had, but it's not that when you get to the show, you're by yourself, because you're not. You're surrounded by typically fans or people that are at least interested in your music. And he had some very interesting and intriguing conversations with those same fans, like before, during, and after the shows. So that's got to be very enriching to him and fulfilling and validating. Like, all right, it does make sense what I'm doing. But again, it's like, you know, that's 90 minutes, 2 hours of your day. And then just as quickly as it started, suddenly that light goes out. Now you're back on your own again, back to the next town, back to the next hotel. You know, maybe occasionally he alluded to this briefly, though they never showed it. maybe you crash at that person's house or, you know, another fan's house for that night to save $100 on a hotel. But then same thing. It's just delaying the inevitable. You have to get up the next morning and you have to get in your car by yourself and start all over again. So just an interesting, almost nomadic existence, at least during those times, during the travel times, for someone who, again, I hesitate to call him a rock star. I don't think he is. I don't think he ever reached that level of fame. But for someone who certainly has thousands and thousands of fans, that's how you're able to do a nationwide tour in people's living rooms, and yet can feel so alone, right? And still, he has that desire and drive. I keep saying those two words. That should be the title of this show. He has that desire and drive to keep doing it over and over again, to keep playing shows, keep doing tours, keep recording new music. And again, there's a cost, right? And so that's the kind of the dichotomy of that lifestyle. And, you know, you can compare that to, you know, mega rock bands. I mentioned the Foo Fighters earlier, just as an example. You know, they can do a 3 or 4 month tour, make a shit ton of money, and then come back and be home for 8 or 9 months or more if they want to. You know, maybe a year or more if they're recording a record in that time. And that's just different. That's the thing that people think of when they think of musicians and people in bands and rock star. You know, they, not that, I mean, I think people are smart enough to realize that not all bands are full of millionaires, but nonetheless, that it's just, you know, oh, it's just a few months and then you're back to your normal life. Maybe that means you have a job when you come back, you know, to supplement your income or whatever, but that's the lifestyle. But that's not necessarily the case. There's many shades to being a musician, to being a touring musician. And I say all of this, by the way, as someone who was I consider myself, I guess, a former musician, formerly a band, but I never did the touring thing. You know, we'd play shows out of town, quote unquote, but I never went on a 2-week tour or a 2-month tour even. So I can't imagine the breaks that puts on the rest of your life. You know, and certainly I could never do that now. I have a family. But even when I was in my teens and in bands, 20s in bands, and first part of my 30s when I was in bands, like, you know, I either had school or a job that at that point in my life, I just couldn't leave. So the fact that, again, in this case, David Bazan, but certainly musicians all over the place are able to do that, willing to do that, kind of put everything else on hold in order to chase the dream, it's commendable. And but there's a dark side. That's one of the things that I think this movie really, you know, was able to shine a light on, is just how debilitatingly difficult it can be to live that kind of life, regardless of the level of success. And again, I think he still would widely be considered a successful musician, financially and otherwise, but just comes with a cost. So kudos to him. Kudos to the filmmakers. Again, I highly recommend it. It's called Strange Negotiations. Check it out on Amazon Prime. You got to pay a couple bucks to rent it, or like $5 to own it. Whatever, it's worth it. It's a good flick. As my wife said, we started watching it, we pay a lot more for a lot less, which is true. So we paid $2 to rent it. Not a big deal. But yeah, it did bring up, you know, in my mind, and I think anyone who watches it, again, just that desire and drive. And it reminded me, and it, there are plenty of things that remind me of this, that there are so many things that I want to do and have done in some cases, but that I still want to do. Like, you know, a couple of years ago, I released an album called 2021. Every month on the 21st of the month in the year 2021, I put a song up there on YouTube. Link in the description below. It's called Scotty J's YouTube page. It has all my songs. And, you know, it was for me. I didn't expect anything to happen. I didn't think I was going to get a record deal off of anything crazy like that. So it was kind of a passion project, if you will. But like I've been thinking relatively recently, I want to do a follow-up to that. I want to do another album. That was some of those, especially the ones, the early months of 2021, I was still figuring out the best way to record, you know, the other musical parts. And some of it's kind of cringy if I go back and listen to it, but I still stand behind those songs. I think they're fine. But it was just, you know, now I feel like I learned a lot through that process. I've learned stuff since then, just, you know, offhand, parallel to creation of anything creative. And it's just like, I want to do that again. It was fun. Maybe I do some real, I didn't do any real drums on that album, and I should. I have a drum set downstairs. I have a guitar downstairs. I could theoretically play all of the instruments if I really wanted to. And I should. I feel like I should. But I just need that motivation, figure out what the, you know, is there going to be a theme to the album? Is it going to be as kind of all over the place as the first one was? Because the first one very much was all over the place. I don't know that answer, but I need to figure that out. So stay tuned. That may be coming. But again, link in the description below if you want to go check out any of those tracks. And again, if you listen to January, you're like, this is terrible. Yeah, it wasn't that good. Give the others a chance. They're all very different. That's the one thing that I will say I was proud of, is it wasn't like an album of all country. In fact, there's no country because I hate country music. But, you know, there was some jazzier stuff. There was certainly some like rap, some light rap, some hardcore rap. There was more rock, more, it's more EDM, a couple EDM songs. It's really all over the place. But it was fun. It was fun doing it. I don't regret it. And I want to do it again. I just need that desire and drive, which I've definitely determined is now the title of the episode tonight. So anyway, just wanted to hop on and let you guys know what was going on with the network, with the BroPod show, what's coming up in the coming weeks, talk about that movie, and get a little introspective on it and how it's potentially impacting, you know, decisions that I'll make in the near and or distant future. So time will tell. Stay tuned for that. But anyway, it's 11:54, so I need to edit this super fast and upload it. So I'm going to do that right now because I'm running out of time. That's it. Thanks for listening, guys, to Scott Speaks. And, yeah, we'll catch up to you next week with another BroPod episode, hopefully. Or something, maybe other half. Who knows? You know what to do. Click, like, share, subscribe. The BroPod Network, you get a blanket. The BroPod Network at gmail.com. The _bro_pod. And BroPodNetwork.com is the website. So check it out. Like, tell a friend, spread the word. We appreciate it. And yeah, talk to you next time, guys.